There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast where myself, comedian and writer Dame Baptiste, and my producer friend Howard Cohen, aka The Hizzer.
Hello.
And a very special mix of very special guests pose the questions that need to be asked. And we're talking everything from politics, both regular and hood, as well as semantics, as well as prosthetics.
As well as how am I still losing socks?
I'm
35, Dane. I'm still losing socks.
There's a heaven for them. There's a heaven for odd socks.
There's a fucking conspiracy. I'm not going to go into it now.
I don't know what it is. And why don't they have like socks? Well, they're probably just tracking for socks now, I imagine.
That's going to be costly.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I pay a £70 pair of socks. But anyway, moving on.
All right.
Fucking hell.
No, I don't
own it.
I don't own it. I saw a pair. Okay, I don't own a pair of £70 socks. Oh, God.
Mate, you could have that. That's fine.
I could, but then, you know, how would I sleep at night?
There's an Edinburgh.
Comfortably,
there's
apparently.
With some Edinburgh hour,
yeah, exactly.
£70 socks.
£70 socks. It can happen. It could definitely happen. On today's show, our guest is a comedian. She's a writer for BBC Radio 4, regularly records stand-up for BBC Radio, and in 2017 actually performed at the Johannesburg International Comedy Festival. She's taken 2-hour-long shows to the Edinburgh Fringe, which were very successful and very funny, and she's been on podcast panel shows Global Pillage and the Guilty Feminist podcast, and is also a good friend and a good companion for a car journey. and has one of the best observations on the Great British Bake Off that I've ever heard. Good friend of mine, Athena Kublenyu.
Hey.
Thank you for coming.
What's my observation at Bake Off? Well, I've forgotten it.
The whole thing is predicated on sugar, access to which came through Victorian times during the slave trade, which they kind of leave out the reason why we are so sugar obsessed and why we have sugar in the first place.
Yeah, I talk about that a lot, actually. It does my head in.
Yeah.
Because the sugar conversation is like linked to slavery, and the rise of patisserie in the West is linked to slavery. And we celebrate it, and it's like a decadent thing that should be destroyed.
Right. Yeah, that kills more people than, you know, supposedly gun crime in the black community does, as well as, I'll go far to say that sugar has probably been responsible for more bloodshed than cocaine.
Probably, yeah, actually. If you think about like something like diabetes, like it's like that's one of the biggest... Diabetes kills more people than anything in this country. Don't quote me on that.
No, I think
it does,
yeah.
There's a massively crazy statistic about diabetes.
But you can reverse it now, can't you? Have you seen this stuff?
Yeah.
You're always able to. You've always been able to.
Because it's sugar that causes it. Yeah. So you cut out the sugar and you can reverse it.
It's an autoimmune disease. So it's just a question of you introducing too much sugar into your body. Which
that's a great excuse for not going out, isn't it?
Well, no sugar.
I'm busy reversing my diabetes.
A lot of the sugar that people, adults especially, because adult onset diabetes is an autoimmune condition that comes from your immune system attacking pancreatic cells, and you can cure yourself of adult onset diabetes by regulating your diet. And a lot of the time, I think most people consume their sugar via alcohol. But then the thing is, for those who don't have alcohol, like Muslims, for example, very big on sugary treats because the only vice they can enjoy. So when you go to like Edgware Road, for example, or even Dubai, they are also potentially on the cusp of having a real issue with obesity because sugar is the only vice they're able to enjoy, which is not haram. And also they're in a desert, which means people don't walk around very much to walk off all of the sugar they take in, and everyone drives everywhere. And also if you are in a very prestigious echelon of society, no one's going to be like, hey man, you can start to put on weight because that will get you whipped.
If anything, that's a signal. I mean, that's a sign of power. Just being able to walk around and be fat and like in be like no one's going to talk to you, and you then think, well, you dare people to say something. I dare you to say something. But like there's a bigger issue here, that the food industry just poisons people for money. Like its only incentive is to make money, so it won't say, oh, we won't sell that product because it's a bit unhealthy. It will say, we'll sell that product because it will make people hungrier and thirstier. Which is like, imagine like being sold petrol that falls out the bottom of your car. You wouldn't buy it, right? But with food, that's what they do. Well, and sugar is like the most kind of effective means of giving people something that satiates them, but then like gives them a craving again.
My wife used to work in advertising, as I think I've told Dane many times before. And she one of her jobs was to get a famous chocolate spread brand to double their sales. And the way they did it was convince parents that it's quite healthy to have this for breakfast. And their sales went through the fucking roof.
And I've seen
those adverts, like, hey, just spread chocolate on your bread for breakfast. And it'll give you loads of energy.
There's a great meme about which kind of sort of illustrates what's in it. And it's like 60% sugar and it's like 2% nuts or something.
It's like, well, it's palm oil, it's isn't something. It? Palm oil, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of palm oil in it. But yeah, it's basically sugar with like a little bit of chocolate
basically
in it. Yeah.
It's a brown sugar butter.
Yeah. My wife said
that's my username for certain.
My wife always said that the way to explain sugar addiction to people, she drew this great picture because she's smart, aren't you, Tara? If she's listening, and she drew this picture of like, imagine if they were selling Coke. If you were addicted to cocaine, and everywhere you went, there were just adverts for cocaine. You would do a lot of fucking cocaine. And that's what sugar is. There's just like adverts for it constantly and we're all sucked into it. Hey, I went to buy some petrol. Oh, there's fucking chocolate everywhere. You know, like...
It's mad. But ironically, like, as much as I hate sugar, I hate the sugar tax because...
what an annoying thing.
It is, because even though I hate sugar every now and again, I like my treats. You know what I mean? I like my ginger beer.
Reward yourself. Like, I like a cherry vanilla Coke from Five Guys. Can't have that anymore because now it's cherry vanilla zero.
And it tastes like swimming pool water.
Yeah.
You know, like, why replace the sugar with chemicals? I sort of feel like, and no one's been educated as to how bad sugar is because they're just consuming the same crap without the sugar rather than making like a choice to have something healthier.
The thing is, the sugar as well is that the sugar that most people consume nowadays is actually cornstarch.
Yes.
So it's actually from cane. Like, cane sugar could be okay in moderation. But the fact that we have like fructose, which is like cornstarch, I don't even know you can get sugar from corn in the first place.
It's like highly refined.
Yeah, so, but it's highly refined. And oh man, if you smell that stuff and that's burning when you go to a fairground, that's what gets me.
The minute you put it in your mouth, about 10 minutes later, it's turned to fat. I mean, again, not a true statistic, but just using that exaggeration, say like it is, if you don't burn that off, it just metabolizes like very, very quickly. So it's poison. The food industry poisons us.
A great alternative, cocaine, obviously.
If you become obese, then cocaine will help you lose those pounds. Sure.
Funny enough, we're sponsored by cocaine. No, we're not. No, we're not. And Dane's agent, we're definitely not. Sorry. Well, it's probably time for a first question, isn't it? Sorry, everyone.
So Athena, as our esteemed guest, who is also podcasting for two.
That's sweet. That's probably the cutest thing someone's ever said. I'm
still, you only get one question, just so you know.
You get one question.
You get one question.
All right, well, I won't ask hers then because it was rubbish. my question is, it's a closed question, but it's also an obtuse one. Mm-hmm. Is it worth fighting the power?
Oh,
it's a good question.
Wow.
Should I give you some background as to why I'm asking it?
Yes, please.
So I realized something not too long ago. Like when I was younger, I used to like get up, watch TV, turn on teletext. look at the news. That's where I get my news from. And something would piss me off. Like, and this is me as like a 10-year-old going, I'm really annoyed. And then all through secondary school, you know, you'd open up a newspaper or just 17 and whatever. I'd look at something like that and be like, something would piss me off. Right. And now, fast forward 2018, I go through my Twitter timeline every morning, something pisses me off. And I'm like, why is it when I'm gonna wake up and have everything just be just for one day? Okay, no cartoons of Serena Williams, no triggering, no Labour Party shadow ministers saying weird stuff, no Twitter threads, when is it worth it? Because we've been fighting the power for a long time now, and it feels like a proxy war against stupidity that we're losing.
Yeah, fucking right. I mean, Dane, do you want to go first? Dane just looking off into the distance, listeners.
I'm thinking about it because,
the
you know,
one tier.
In many ways, yeah, exactly. In many ways, it's definitely been my experience that, you know, I've had a very similar journey whereby, I guess, as soon as I had some level of self-awareness or awareness of my racial or cultural identity, then I'd say moving forward, like it would be like, either every day or every other day, you'd see a tabloid story which would elicit some negative emotion and I'd be pissed off real quick. So I can definitely relate to that. So I'd say short answer, yes, it is worth fighting the power. And I say that because I am aware that my current experience, so far as the phenomenon that does piss me off, whether it is like you said, the proxy war against the stupid, is that the odds that I consider myself stacked against me in this fight against the power seem insurmountable a lot of time, but in comparison to previous battles fought, I feel like, you know, the fact that I'm even able to articulate my angst or my anger at the power structures shows a level of progress that we've made. Mm. Where there was a time where if you spoke up against the established structures that oppressed us, you know, for example, like is it Noble Drew Ali, who was like Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X's predecessor, he was arrested for sedition. Just for even a suggestion of black self-determination, that was enough for you to go to prison. So if I can be at a stage now where I can potentially have a platform and I can speak out against these systems, then I guess there's some progress. And I guess, you know, the way to rationalize it is that when you say, is it worth fighting the power? It's yes. Even if you may not live to see the victory or see the beginning of it, like, you know, I like to, and maybe I romanticize the struggle to an extent, but for me, it's kind of like, you know, I'm a brick in this wall.
But I suppose the question is, one, the power, it changes over time.
That is
a weird, in our lifetime, we the power was fought by Tony Blair, and then he became the power, and then...
Or was he always the power? Well, if you ask George Galloway would say, yes, he is.
But you know what I mean, though? Like, we were too young to really, at the time, understand the Tories and what happened in that period when we were a lot younger, but like... He obviously was the opposition to the power, and then he became the power, and then these other people became the power. I think it was someone who fucked a pig was one of the power, and then he bottled it.
Yeah.
And then there's this new power in charge who can't keep hold of the power because they're not very good.
And wasn't democratically elected. Yeah. So yeah.
But also with Tony Blair, like, in many ways, he didn't change. We just changed our minds about what he represented, because he represented, like, you know, financial freedom and having lots of money and ownership of staff and, like...
Actually, embodied Thatcherism a lot more than we actually thought.
I think so,
thought.
Yeah. In fact, the thing that pissed people off about Thatcherism, I think, wasn't that it existed. It was that it was only for, like, the few. People didn't want to change the structure of society. They just wanted a piece of that pie. And Tony Blair kind of allowed that. Like, when I was at school, everybody had Tamagotchis and pagers and all this stuff. Like, you know, and...
Yeah, and university. For a lot of people at university, would have been an impossible... It was not even up for discussion. And with the introduction of, like, GMVQs and BTECs and vocational qualifications, then it opened up, a whole lot.
So, and that whole kind of that... The idea of, like, a financial kind of boom, like, you can have free money or whatever.
Pretty much.
And then obviously there was a financial kind of crash and people started to get educated as to, like, where money comes from and how it doesn't grow in trees, and people had these massive mortgages and they were like, oh, okay, maybe it's not so cool that we could borrow 100% of our incomes or whatever.
I suppose my point was just that the power will always be there and changing, morph into different things every generation.
But it's like you said, when you said the power's always been there, it's like, does it change? Because I think the best, best bit of literature I read about regards to power structures was in 1984, when there's a book within the book, which is called Theories on Oligarchical Collectivism. And the idea is that, like, the structure of how we exist is that you have the proletariat, or the proles as they're called, and, like, you know, the poor, where, you know, your biggest challenges are, you know, food, water, shelter, and to procreate, your most base human requirements. Then you have the bourgeoisie, which are like the middle class, who can be a lot more transient, and they're trying to stay afloat so they don't end up being a part of proletariat, and in some cases are aspiring to the ruling class. And then you have the ruling class, which today might be referred to as like the 1%, and essentially the mechanism works whereby the bourgeoisie will try and mobilize the proletariat to help them overthrow the ruling class so that they can become the ruling class.
Yeah.
And and basically usurp them from power so they end up becoming... And I feel like that's always been the structure and it's never changed.
That's Brexit. You just described Brexit just
then. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You just described
Brexit, or even if you... It was chattel slavery is the same thing as well, whereby, you know, you had a group of people who would have been the bourgeoisie in the UK... who wanted to start America because they didn't want to keep kicking up money towards this monarchistic kind of system.
Yeah.
And then realized they could, and so they started capitalism, and capitalism, obviously, a system based on exploitation of Africa. And so had all the slaves, and then had to create a separation between the proletariat, would have been, you know, the historic, like, white slaves, and the non-Anglo-Saxon Protestant population of America, and created a term of whiteness so they would be distinct, so that they wouldn't be able to mobilize, they wouldn't be galvanized, and obviously have their competence in labor and strength and overthrow the bourgeoisie and become part of the middle class.
But this is kind of what I mean about, is it worth fighting the foul? Because if you look at America, what you just described, people will say, oh, they just recreated it with the prison system.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's weird because in many ways, you're right. What you said at the beginning, like, things have improved and things have gotten better, and we live in, you know, you've got like, you can be Kevin Hart now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
In America, you know, this is, you can have the American dream and you can live that. But at the same time, it's like, that's like almost like the visible kind of, the visible freedom.
Yeah, of course. Actually, yeah.
There's a lot of people beneath that who are still living in that same, in that same paradigm.
Completely.
Well, I suppose that's the extension of the question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it worth fighting the power to win? Is it worth fighting the? Is it worth fighting the power just because someone's got it?
But yeah, and that's what it is. I think this is sometimes, especially like being in the creative industries, being in entertainment, we kind of like, we know it definitely feels like there's more opportunities for people who aren't traditionally afforded those opportunities. But then that's still very individualistic. You still have like the structures beneath us and beneath that still haven't remained the same. And we celebrate like the successes because you have to. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, it's almost like. This question was triggered by Windrush, actually,
because
I was thinking to myself, like, this really awful thing is happening, and I don't think as black people in this country we've ever had so much like power, wealth, influence, and yet they can still deport us, you know, in this way, and they've been doing it for years, and it's been on
a long fucking time,
and it's not like we didn't notice, because I think a lot of, I've definitely had friends of friends, and I've heard people talk about things that have happened, but to know what's happening en masse as a sort of a matter of policy, and we were like quite inactive, and now we know about it and we're still just as inactive. But yeah, so what were we fighting for? You know, all that we achieved, all those, you know, all the sporting success, all the intellectual success,
all the industrial success of being integral to public transport, especially in London, as well as like, you know, healthcare.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And it's like the presence that we have in this country, this idea that we can fight to kind of be thought of as British and integral. And yet this happens and we don't have there's not a lot of amplification of our anger out there.
That's a good point. I mean, that's probably part of the issue where this almost political or social impotence has come from, is the fact that because we've had it better than we've had it. And for some people, if you have been historically impressed, having it better than you've had it, while it's not the same as equality, comparatively, relatively speaking to you, is fine. So like going back to like other examples or instances, like with Kanye's statement about slavery being a choice. Like some people kind of like, I kind of see what he's saying and blah, 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 and blah, blah. And to me, that revealed some element of black privilege, that there are some people that feel so disconnected with historic struggle. They could be like, well, you know, we are doing quite well.
But it's
blah,
the new
blah.
Conservatism. It's like, I'm here because I worked for it. So you have to work for it.
The whole bootstraps narrative.
And I think, you know, to me, and obviously, listen, I'm just one Jewish man in the world, but like, at least in this country, you talk about fighting the power. I think one of the biggest problems we've had, and it's not a popular opinion I'm about to say, is that, what does the left represent?
Like,
that's a good question. And it's really, really upsetting, because like, I am a TV producing liberal human being who, you know, Jesus Christ, you're not getting me supporting a hard right wing agenda ever. Yeah. That's just not happening.
Yeah.
But then I look at how they got their fucking fingers in into people's minds over the last couple of years. And I look at the left and I go, well, what have you guys been doing while this has been going on? I tell you what we've been doing. We've been fighting amongst each other on issues that I would say, like, and this is, I'm about to tread on very treacherous ice here, okay? Yeah, so I'm aware of it. But there's issues that people talk about online that are issues worthy of discussion, but not to the level of discussion when there are people acting how they act on the right wing, who are your real enemy.
Absolutely agree.
And there's tons of people, like, so take, for example, I'm just going to say, like, pronouns to describe people, you know, and that's an issue of transgender. That's a big issue. And you know what? People should discuss that. But you know what? You might also want to focus on the fucking lunatics on the right wing.
You're not going to get elected, like, because you can remember to use they and them. It's a good thing to do.
Don't out people. Attack people in the way that they do. Like, to me, on the left, that's the number one reason why we ended up in these situations in the last couple of years. Because you were too busy doing that, when really your big enemy's over there being fucking assholes.
But it goes back to what I'm saying about the bourgeoisie, is that, like, essentially, while we have this dialogue along these bipartisan lines and who's on the left and who's on the right, You look at like a picture of the alumni of the Bullingdon Club, they're both left and right, and they decide to be politicians before they decide which party they'll be have allegiance with. And yep. I think it's very similar to a certain part of society whereby people that are always actively involved in this discourse online, people that are insist on these things. For me, how can I put this? I'll be honest, I just feel like, you know, it's a lot of just middle-class people that are coming up with identities to make their lives more interesting and to almost alleviate themselves of the responsibility of being a part of the privileged.
Mm. Oh, yeah, there's definitely... I mean, this is definitely something that's a big part of white feminism because...
Which I sometimes refer to as demonism.
Yeah, they'd probably like that as well. Yeah. A nice gender neutral.
Yeah.
You copyright that, don't you? No,
no. Yeah, but this is really, because I always have to remind white women, and I think sometimes they get annoyed with me for it. Like, you have like this society that's structured in a certain way in the West, arguably the globe, but let's say the West, and the top of it is like white men, and like beneath them,
it's you.
White women. It's thank like, you. Straight white women. It's you. Like, you're right.
Secondary you're benefactors right of secondary so, benefactors of it. Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So it's like exactly. The idea of like the kind of the victimhood that comes out of being identifying as a feminist has to be measured against like other aspects of your identity, whether you're white or you're straight or you're disabled or whatever, which they will call intersectionality. But it's more than just knowing what it means. You have to understand how if you are like a white straight woman, that you probably are part of the problem and don't even realize it, because that's not your fault. That's a world you've inherited. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But to attempt to try and detach yourselves from that as under the guise of feminism, you can't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't, especially because, you know, most people's primary education is from their mother. So, you know, these racists are coming from somewhere.
Mm. Yeah.
But you know what? In response to the original question, I have to say yes.
Right.
Because I'll give you one example. Gay rights. That is a scenario where the power was successfully fought.
That's true.
And we are now going to grow up. We're going to have kids and they're going to grow up. And if someone's gay, you know what? The vast percentage of this society will be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas it was like a major thing. And so that is a sign that at times.
But I would like to see that amongst working class as well.
I think it's at least acceptance of the principle.
Yes.
Is across the board now because it's law.
I mean, with the exception of a few nations.
Yeah,
but for the most part. But I think it's definitely worth fighting the power. Depending on who the power is. But then the thing is, it's just the fact that there will never be the conquest of the powers that be will always, like, as long as people crave power as well, then there'll always be one to fight as well.
Mm.
So yeah.
A great question.
What's Hendrik say again? It said that we will never overcome. We'll never be able to enjoy the power of love until we overcome the love of power.
The love of power. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah.
My thing is like it is worth it, but only if you're organized and you know what good looks like.
That's what tapped into what I was saying about the left. Right?
We've never really been organized. Like going back to the Windrush example, like I think as a black population in this country, so made up of Caribbean and African and mixed race people, we are like so disorganized. You have no spokespeople. We have no organized way to respond to things.
We have no galvanized identity. Yeah. Like African-American is a distinct identity. Yeah, and within that, under that umbrella, then you have Caribbean-Americans and you have, members of Afro-Latinos or members of the Latin community. Whereas like black British is a term that was more projected onto us rather than a term we created for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're black British and we've got gold medals around our necks.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I think it's like, it actually upsets me a little bit that this can happen and will continue to happen because I don't think, I don't have to stop it. All I can do is like, I had a little bit in my show about it. So that was a nice tweet about it.
I'm working on it, if that helps.
You've got to keep doing it.
Sorry, no, I'm working on it. Don't worry. Yeah. It's in hand.
That's what I came to check. What are you doing at Windrush Day?
Yeah, yeah. I'm making inquiries. I'm going to speak on it. I was on BBC on Sunday.
Yeah, you were.
Talking about it as well. So I'm just trying to find as many diverse, because I think media play such a large part in forming perspicacity of how we are viewed as members of the diaspora, and I'm trying to combat that as much as possible. So I'm fighting, Athena, for you and for all of us.
Me and my unborn will rest easy.
I know, you should, tonight, man. I'm fighting for the babies. I am.
I mean, I can't claim to be fighting it in the same way that Dane is. That would be. I did complain to the Great Northern Railway and got a refund.
It all counts. Jewish people
have traditionally always been allies of Black freedom movements. Okay,
we talk about this every.
Oh really?
Yeah. Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder, and that's the dream.
This is so funny. South Africa. Even in the UK, it wasn't Jewish people pushing shit for letterboxes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I've the anti-Semitism thing, and as it's happened at the same time within Russia, and I think that's not a coincidence. Mm. Like, it's actually part of the same, even though someone will say it's one thing's coming from Labour, one thing's coming from conservatives, it's actually part of the same racism.
Yeah.
And I think it's a real shame that we haven't really acknowledged that as strongly as we should have. Yeah. But it's definitely lots of commonality.
Maybe that's how we fight the power.
It's the key. The galvanization is a big part of it. And I think, yeah, that's a really good point, actually, that like it's happening at the same time. And I think, you know, in terms of Corbyn, I like the guy. I feel like what his intentions are to try and do that within the framework of the left as it exists is probably why he's flopping.
Yeah.
So I think in order for him to, if he wants to affect the changes and the and arrive at the social climate that he desires, judging by how he speaks, then he would have to go so far to say, weed out any kind of anti-Semitism within the party and really kind of restructure the left as it exists.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But that's a big challenge.
Well, that's what we're here for, man. Yeah. The soul is forged in suffering, isn't it?
It's a good question, though.
That was a great question.
I'm going to go slightly different then, but not ask something quite as serious. Although it could have serious...
I always make it serious. It's a real problem.
No, it's not a problem. We won that. That's
question
what it's about.
Everything.
So I'm going to ask... our guest a question, and it's because of you're potentially about to, well, it could happen on this show, you could you know, this could be a live birth, and we go to the ambulance, you know, could we
phones,
really
phones on standby.
So I've been ready since the start.
Yeah,
but,
we're ready.
This is soundproof, isn't it, this place? You might want to get outside whilst it's happening.
You got terrace and towels, it's all good, man.
It's an incredible scenario of being pregnant, and this is cool to talk about.
I'm gonna
ask this question because I think about this all the time.
Who's
right?
the father? I'm not saying.
Twitter poll. I smell a Twitter poll coming. No. No, I've got a really simple question, which is, what's it like having a human being growing inside of you? And doesn't it make you think that all men are fucking just wimps?
I thought that anyway. So that's no. What's it like? It's just like having wind. Like, I don't know how to. I've never had tapeworm before, but I imagine if you have tapeworm, you know, because they crawl around in your stomach.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Eat everything you eat.
I swing from, oh my God, the miracle of creation to bloody hell, there's 6 billion of us. We can't all be miracles. It depends on what side of bed I get out of.
I'm talking about like chores, right? Okay. So like you know, we all have chores that we do in our house. You put the washing in the machine.
Yeah.
Someone's got to hang it up. Oh, I'll fucking do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, and like, you know, like I respect and love Dane here, right? But if he had to go through what you'd been through, I think he might.
Oh God, you'd hear about it.
You'd hear about it. You'd fucking hear about it. That's for sure.
There'd be a 9-month Twitter thread is what that would be.
I mean, I can't even describe to you how difficult I would become if I had to create a human being inside my body. I can just about live a day.
I would say the physical burden of being a woman is greater than that of a man. The periods and all that stuff. Being pregnant is as awful as they say it is. You get you're sick. It's not morning sickness, it's all day sickness. You lose control of your body. And I'm a bit of a control freak.
Yeah.
So that's the thing I hated the most. I couldn't control what I ate anymore because that's just eat what mouth wanted. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
What's the changes eating wise?
Just cheese, pizza, white bread. Yeah. And I used to be sort of brown bread, chickpeas, kale, carrots, all that stuff, hummus. And then overnight, it was just like Mars bars, Mars ice creams, any variation of the Mars brand.
Really? Like a Mars thing?
Yeah.
See, I'm in here and I'm thinking, oh, that's a good lucky. That's a good lucky. Maybe I would do
rabbit. For someone like me, this is like, even whilst I was doing it, I was like, this is great. But also my mind was like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Mm. Like, I put on 4.5 stone.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I sat around for 2 weeks and put on 4 pounds and I was like,
most of it's knockers, to be fair.
Guys are like, hey, this is a good idea. Mars bars Bluebears? What's the problem?
There are people in like in science labs right now trying to create a womb to stick into a man. Now it is like it is a privilege, but it's literally you lose control of everything. Exists for the baby now. So baby brain's a real thing because all your oxygen leaves your brain and gets sent to the child. Totally true. You do become very absent-minded and clumsy and you know all that stuff.
Do you notice an actual functioning change, like as in your,
Definitely. And the hormones, man, like I came out in a rash all over. Basically, you get all these symptoms and then you call the midwife and they go, yeah, pregnancy. So it's literally rash, pregnancy, itch, pregnancy. I can't see, pregnancy. my left arm fell off. Yeah, that's pregnancy. That happens to you. Like, what is it? It's a symptom of pregnancy. And they're like, well, everybody's different. But if it's happening and you're pregnant, it's because you're pregnant. Right. And so it's in many ways. But I was actually chatting to someone who's had three kids today. Right. Bizarrely enough. And I was like, first and last, not doing it again. She was like, Athena, as soon as they're born, you forget about it. Mm. You forget about it and you get broody instantly.
I can't imagine men would be the same. I think this is a real thing where people talk about equality, right? And I always think the same thing, which is, men and women aren't equal. Women are better than men because they have to go through this creation of humanity.
That's the responsibility, yeah.
Can I take at the risk of adding to potential virtual signaling here?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a very good way of describing the act of deity, like holograph principle, because like you said, it's a whole kind of term of sacrifice. Only for at the end you to love your creation unconditionally. Mm. So when we're trying to describe.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I guess theology to people, that's the idea of God, isn't it? Is that, you know, it's all this painstaking blood, sweat and tears to create something only for it to, for you to love your creation unconditionally, even if it forgets your sacrifice or curses your sacrifice and curses the fact that they were created, which is like, I guess what humans do in the face of like, you know, God itself. So it's interesting, man. And I mean, I think rather than saying whether or not men can do it and keeping it as rigidly binary as that, it's more, I guess, it's a very strong function of the feminine, that there is a part of our brain which lends to creativity as well as maternity, which ensures our survival as a species.
But I just think in just terms of, just in terms of plain effort.
You
know, like men are just like, you know, there's like
and a... tends you to look somewhat presentable and stuff, because probably when women are pregnant and stuff, they still got like, shave their legs and, you know, parts which we'll consider unsightly.
Oh, don't worry. So, that's gone out the window.
But you see like women with like bikini, women in bikinis and stuff, are heavily pregnant and stuff as well, and they still have to adhere
It's crazy that there's that expectation that is maintained. Like, I don't know how much detail to go into, but yeah, there's one bit's gone out the window because you have to be careful with infections. The arms and her legs, I have to say, I've still kept that vanity. If you see a pregnant woman in a bikini, have a word. Just say, look, love, look, let it grow, because you'll be worth it. You don't want to be itching in 6 months' time.
Does it change your opinion of everyone you ever know who's done it? Because
if people who've had like several children, like more than one, especially I definitely struggled a bit being pregnant and working and stuff. How you can be pregnant and still raise other kids, I take off it. I put on hats specifically. Yeah. To, I walk out of the house. I walk out. I'm like, where's the hat? I'm like, oh, and I see, if I see like someone who's playing with kids, I'm like, let me take my hat off to you.
Yeah.
Incredible. I don't know how you can be pregnant and deal with other children. Right. It's just, so definitely even more. And I think something that this is probably true for most people who have kids, like you think about your mum and I'm like, wow, like, especially, the circumstances with which my mum had me and my brother, she had like a bit of ill health and stuff. And I'm like, I don't know how she done it, you know, and in the '80s as well, you know, like
my mum as well. Yeah. She's eighties where, you know, and also the bedside manner towards immigrants was not really the best by the NHS at that time as well.
Hmm.
And my mother had complications whereby, you know, she was still, severe hemorrhaging and she was still bleeding. Like for many years after we were born, I spent 3 days in the incubator after I was born. So I didn't spend time with my mother after our birth. And, even at this stage in human existence and our technological advances, there's a lot of complications where childbirth is concerned. So
it's a very scary time, really, because it's like it's the most natural thing, but also like the most vulnerable time of of your life.
Mm.
And it's so I think about this made me more like admiring of her, really. Mm. And it's true, like you do forget that your mum gave birth to you, like you don't think about it every day.
No,
you just kind of go around existing.
It's part of the reason I was bringing it up, really. I just think we grow up and then there's this point where they go, oh, so, you know, do the thing and then they make then it grows and you're like, oh, cool, I'll just accept that as just normality. But like, you know.
No, but a human being made a sacrifice and put their own life on hold for yours.
It's so wild, right?
You to come into this world, you take a loan out on someone else's life.
Yeah.
It's true. The amount of frozen pizzas I've eaten for this child, they'll never understand the sacrifice.
What are you getting? What are you going for?
I had a two-pack before this child and now it's gone. I'm never getting it back.
I mean, that's a bonus in some ways. There must be moderate times where you're like, oh, this is great. I just eat this and I can...
It's nice not to be vain, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely made me more respectful of that sacrifice of all mothers, really. And it is I do feel sorry for guys in that I know a lot of men who want to be invested in the process and they can't be, because what can you do other than get me a cushion?
My prospective wife or partner is pregnant, hit the gym maybe
is that what you're thinking?
I feel like there's got to be some ways for me to use the testosterone and also maybe do the physical act of developing the thick skin to deal with some of the hormones, since I will be largely accountable for her condition.
So, yeah, it's your fault. Yeah.
I remember my friend calling me at like 3 a.m. and he'd be like, I'd be like, what are you doing? And he's like, going KFC drive-thru. It's 3:00 a.m. He's in the States. He's like, yeah, I know. So, but where are you going? Wifey needed to fill that chicken, so.
Just fetch. That's what guys do, just fetch.
So that's it, standby. Yeah, you're ready to go.
Yeah, even like, so, I mean, So basically, I've moved in with my mum, and so me and the father were co-parenting or whatever, which is nice. But it's like, oh, you could just disappear. Like, you're literally redundant. Like, and it has made me think, like, oh, I do feel sorry for fathers who are totally invested in the situation, because it's like, you want to help, but you can't. You know, the placenta doesn't go through you. You don't feed the child. If the child wants breast milk and you're breastfeeding, unless, you know, obviously you can express and bottle feed, but you still need the mother to express. And even then, like, you know, why use a bottle when, you know, some children don't go to the bottle. Some children will just want the breast. For the first, you know, first 6 months to a year, you're just like, you might as well just go to work, innit? And like pay some bills. That feeling of redundancy can manifest itself in some like
negative way.
Definitely.
My dad did say to me, you know, that when you're first born is like, you know, it's like, and also as a man, it's also maybe there's an egotistical aspect of knowing, especially if you're the mother of your child has a son, then you are no longer the main man in her life.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, wow.
That's another thing. That's that part of that complex is being aware that you are never going to be the main man in that woman's life.
Yeah.
So, you know, because essentially that child is completely dependent on her, doesn't go anywhere and will love her, don't matter how fat she gets or how often she shaves.
It's amazing we don't live in a matriarchy, like with these dynamics.
Well,
like,
that's why I bring it up, really. Yeah. You see what I mean? It's mental.
But it's interesting. But then the thing is, I think, you know, you look at like a lot of proto-Abrahamic religion cultures where, you know, you see a lot of fertility gods in Africa, and goddesses in Africa, and a Parthenon of like goddesses in like, you know, Greek and Roman culture and stuff as
it's
well.
It's true, so, like Kemet and Nubia and stuff.
Nubia and stuff. So for a long time there was, and even in Kemetic culture was really the queens that would choose like potential partners to continue the dynasty. So for a very long time, there was definitely a matriarchal society, which I guess kind of made sense. If you are going to be in task with passing on the existence of human beings, then you'd want to choose the right partners. And it's very interesting that now you see there is a large element of Abrahamic religion where it's either trying to mimic the power of creation that women have or maybe oppose or suppress it. Yeah. You know, for the fact that marriage has to take, it has to precede having sex, and that has to take place in a church, or even the act of I want to say the Eucharist, where you drink the blood of Jesus. But what people say actually is that the shape of the goblet that you drink the blood of Christ from is more in the shape of the birth canal, and the blood actually represents the menstrual cycle. So this is what they say, and obviously, you know, even Islam being a lunar cult, well, the phases of the moon are the same as the lunar, the menstrual cycle. So yeah. I think there is a real esoteric recognition of the power of maternity and femininity that we kind of fight against.
Yeah, we need to make sure it's back in focus.
Yeah,
no?
Yeah, in the same way that now, like, you know, for a very long time, my mum would try and scrub the back of my neck, and I'd be like, I'm a man now! I'm 12! What's wrong with you? So, yeah, it's...
I told people the other day, I still call my mum every day.
That's normal.
Yeah, I think that. And they were like, really? And I was like, yeah, it's not because I need to tell her that, you know, I ate my vegetables at lunch.
No, it's not
like,
at all, but I speak to my mum every day as well.
Yeah, yeah. She wants to hear I'm all right.
No, I think that's... Yeah. But same with your dad's.
Yeah, but then I think... But the funny thing with my dad and I is that we have... And it's very much a cultural thing. We're men of few words.
Mm.
But by that same token, he is aware that I have a close relationship with my mum.
Yeah.
Right.
And for my dad, And, you know, my dad is a very... would be, I guess, considered very alpha and masculine. That, you know, he does everything with his hands. He's worked woodwork and he's a mechanic. And is like, but I can take for free every Sunday, mum's house,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Without fail.
Interesting.
If she needs her garden clean, he's there. Yeah. Like Mondays, he's there. And you know, it's the same principle. You know, and for a lot of cultures, you know, who very much exuberate a very masculine alpha thing. So like, you take Italian Americans and math and stuff, where it's like, if you're someone who doesn't take care of your mother or respect your mother, then what kind of man are you?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, the big thing to me still is just that, you know, we're sitting here and there's a human being.
Yeah. She's fighting to get out. Like, literally, I took her to the cinema today and she was going nuts. So, yeah, she's like...
You took her where?
I took her to the cinema.
What'd you watch?
Crazy Rich Asians.
Right.
It's a good film, yeah.
She liked it, did she? Or?
Well, I don't know if she liked it or hated it, but she was responding very enthusiastically to the environment. And you see like leg.
Oh, you can see it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing.
And that's what I mean. Like bottom line.
Oh man, you've got to poke it back in. It's nuts. Because it's like she's kind of got, normally there's something sticking out here, like you know those cartoon. You know, like in the cartoons where someone gets hit on the head.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Nut comes up. Yeah. Oh, it's really. I don't like it at all. I have to just sort of go. Yeah.
I've only seen a fucking film pictures, but it's amazing.
That's wild, right? That's like the craziest thing.
Yeah, because they're like because they're she's about 8 pounds now apparently, which is unfortunate. It's an unfortunate weight for a baby.
It's a big baby.
Yeah. Right. Well, they apparently use a scan to estimate the weight. Hopefully, it's wrong. She's on a diet right now.
So, you're not though. Frozen pizzas aren't going to help get that weight down.
But it's nuts. But actually, going back to could men handle it? I just remembered something. Apparently, there was a male contraceptive pill developed, and it had pretty much the same side effects as the female one. And they were like, "Oh, we won't give this to men. This is poison." This is technically true.
Yeah,
women, you must control your cycle.
Well, even the coil, whatever. Man. The women have the coil.
I will never take that.
For me, not anything. If that's your choice, contract, absolutely fine. But to tell a man you're going to put a metal hook in his urethra by way of his penis, stop him getting pregnant, and see if you survive that consultation.
Oh, please. It's crazy.
Can bring up a prostate exam to my friends and there's going to be a fight.
Cool. Even the cap, like, it's just like, even like, never, all, the idea of having like a physical, like a plastic metal object put there, I'd rather abstain.
Yeah.
But we'll come back to you about
we'll come back to you
and see how you feel. We'll come back to you and see how you feel about that.
I said rather abstain with 9 months of baby in my stomach. Like, clearly it's not the case.
But good luck with the we'll look forward to
thank
seeing.
You.
We'll let the listeners know.
I'll send you an update. I'll send you cute pics.
Yeah. Right.
Of the baby, not what I perceive to be cute.
Dane. You're going to wrap it up, no?
I'm going to wrap up, yeah. And hopefully continue with the theme so we make the whole thing kind of dovetail. Because my question was also on the basis of the wonderment of childbirth and pregnancy. And also in line with the question you asked, because, you know, and the background to this question is, my nephew is now, he's 12. Well, he's 11, going on 12. We are talking to see a film called Ready Player One.
Oh, yeah.
Not the best.
People saying not great.
No, it's a shame.
Great, not great.
Because it's supposed to be a
really good book. Yeah. Wealth of Potential, landed flat on his face.
Right.
However, there was a part of the film where my nephew remarked, oh, that's kind of racist. And my heart sank because I felt like I failed in that whatever my works have been or in thoughts or words or deeds have not been enough. And there's lots of others for him not to be aware of that. And that, you know, and I remember being the age I was at when I became aware of the existence of racism. He's maybe a few years later, but the fact that he is still aware of it without any prompt from me.
Was it a racist moment?
Kind of.
What was it?
I think it was so the end of the film, and I can't remember the name of the actress, but she's the lesbian from Master of None.
What's her name?
Can't remember. I know who you mean.
Yeah. But she, we'll remember. But she had said, I think, there's something about a reward and how little of the reward she had gotten or how little she was involved in the plan. And he was like, oh, why is she not even included? And he was like, oh, that's so racist. And I was just like, man. Like, I really thought I'd be working towards a point where he would be kind of oblivious to that. And not as a result of naivety, literally just because, you know, you want to create a better world for successive generations than the one you lived in. I guess that's supposed to be the whole raison d'etre of being an adult or being responsible or guardian. So that's the background. Anyway, the point is that I feel like we all at some point maybe feel like we could, there'd be several things we'd like to tell our younger selves, which I guess is a one way of looking at having a child. And I am grateful for the fact my parents have never kind of had that narrative where I'm like, they're like, I own you and you're my child, et cetera, et cetera. They've really been more custodial and more like guardians, being like, you know, at some point you'll be an adult and be responsible for your own life. And we can only guide you to this point based on our the wisdom of experience. So that's a very convoluted way of me saying, if you were to give your child their briefing for, you know, their first year on earth, what's the special stuff you've learned that you may only you know, secret stuff that you'd want to tell your kid?
Jesus
Christ.
The first thing is
just basically a briefing of the stuff, like the secret stuff, like, you know, for example, like where it's like, it can even be stuff like where you can go to use the toilet for free in the train station, like
the best place to go for piss in King's Cross,
exactly, yeah stuff like that.
Marylebone's free, it's always been free, nice. But it's a bit out of the way, but good if you're going to Birmingham.
Yeah.
So do as much business in Birmingham as you can, I guess. That'd be the first bit of advice.
Wickham as well. It's got Marylebone. Wickham as well.
Oh, yeah, Wickham. Yeah, that's all right.
And I think if that's all we've got to tell the children, then we're in real
just
trouble.
Just good
places to piss in public.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I've got, so my twin brother, his girlfriend's expecting too.
Ah.
Right. And this is going somewhere. And they both sent me a picture yesterday. And it was a picture of a tiny, tiny, tiny pair of Nike Air Maxes. And I just said, very cute. But what I really wanted to say is, nah, not yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, not yet. They're going to want all that stuff at some point. At some point, they're going to get Instagram and see the Skepta Airs or the Off-Whites, and they're going to start salivating. And I'm like, nah, I would like her to be free as much as I can have her be free for as long as possible of want for things that aren't related to her own personal happiness.
Commercial lies.
Yeah, but
crap.
Bigger than that, because I think it's okay to like beautiful things.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay. I think trainers are beautiful as it happens. It's my culture, my generation. But like, I do think like you have to understand when it serves someone else's interests more than it serves your own. And whether it's really beautiful, or whether it's just something someone else has and you having it, is like a performative thing that makes you feel as good as they do, because they feel good, so I must feel good.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like what I've noticed people do, and this isn't a criticism, because well, it is a criticism, but it's can't be helped, especially when they're about to have children, is like they go out and they buy things, and it's like actually what you actually want to do when you find out you're expecting is like just invest in yourself as a person, because children don't need anything other than somewhere to sleep, something to eat, and shelter. and you know, and I struggle with this whole, oh my God, I bought these cute shoes and I've got this cute top, oh, this thing that they're going to wear for a month and then they're going to be too big for. So
get,
I definitely
get the borrows.
Yeah. Oh man, I've got sackfuls of like secondhand clothes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm actually so grateful because it gives me a connection to my friends and their children.
That one of the most beautiful things I ever see I haven't had kids yet, but one of the beautiful things you see is when my youngest niece turns up and we're at my other brother's house and my other niece is there and the older niece goes, I used to wear that.
Yeah, it's
and
lovely,
goes,
isn't it?
It's yours. And it's like, oh, what a beautiful thing. And they share that.
Yeah, I love really it. Good. And it's like, when we say hand-me-downs, these are things that are like a year old. Like they're not.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
We're not talking about like
things. I had a friend as well on that subject where like my girlfriend at the time had bought a Primark baby grow for his son. And he made a big deal about it being from Primark. And we don't talk anymore.
Yeah, it's mad.
I mean, big deal was what?
Hey, why is it from Primark?
And like, saying,
as in it's shitty.
Yeah, well, not even the quality, but it's from a not an upscale place. Right. And like, I remember thinking, I don't know what this guy's problem is. I spoke to my parents about it and they were like, and this is the kind of thing I will speak to my dad about because I think he'll have a similar perspective. And because he was like, you know, for a long time, your mother and I used to argue over the fact that she'd buy nice things and dresses and stuff. And my mom's got six sisters. So my sister was showered with gifts and they'd bring stuff from America. And like, so he was like, it was always an issue, but he was like, something like a baby grow, the rate at which children grow when they're first born.
I mean, they poo their pants.
Yeah, exactly. they just
poo themselves. Yeah?
It's like, simple explanation.
It's mad. So definitely the idea that, you know, I want to see a smile on her face because she saw, because one of my dreadlocks is in her mouth. Or, you know, something like that. I don't want her to be like, oh my God, gazelles. Like, nah.
I think that's teaching any young person of any age kind of a realization that, you know, individuality above any kind of superficiality is the key to a happy existence. That's a big statement. But I would back it all the way.
Completely.
Like I noticed with my nephews and nieces, I've talked about them probably on here before. I've talked about them because Reggie Yates told one of them to stop flipping trainers. Was the other time I brought them up. But like they're across a few ages from like, I think it's like 9 to 15 now. And they're forming proper characters. Like that's proper who they're going to be. And my biggest battle with them is to say, do not feel weird because of what you like is not what everyone else likes.
Yeah.
One of my nephews, instantly, as soon as he heard Guns N' Roses, fucking liked them. And you know what? No one's listening to that at school. Fuck school.
Yeah.
That's what you should be listening. If you like Guns N' Roses, then listen to them. My niece learned how to play piano, right? She's like 13 now, without a lesson.
Yeah.
So she could hear a song, right? And just start playing and just learn. And it's incredible. You can listen to her play any song now and she's incredible. And she hasn't pursued it because it's like, well, I don't know if I'm any good. Fuck that. You can just do your thing.
Yeah.
You don't need to be bought in by anything else.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Especially now, like with social media, you have an insight into people's lives that like we definitely didn't have. So we'd go home in our houses and we wouldn't know what anyone else was doing.
Me
and my brother were like, this is the Queen. We didn't know that was weird. But now if I Snapchatted that, people would probably like have something to say.
Yeah.
Having that individuality is definitely important now.
Dane fights a good battle on social media. You know, like I see Dane every day on social media fighting a good battle. But you know what? Most people aren't.
Most people
are not. And I am, I don't know, like I'm getting to a point in my life where I can't water it down anymore. There is a poison seeping through our veins. And you know what? I work in television and you know, I know how hard it is to invent a TV show, right? But fucking hell, this thing called The Circle, right? To me, in my opinion, and look, apologies to everyone. It's Studio Lambert, Channel 4, the lovely people who do the voiceover. You know, there's loads of really nice people involved in that show, but fuck me, that's the end of times.
I've just heard people say that.
I just caught a glimpse of it, but I'm not really that aware of it. I had the issue with The Circle where the advertisement for it was a what's called a wrap over the newspaper,
right.
And there was a story at the top which read about a sex slave being returned to a kidnapper. But then at the top, but the picture was of a topless black man in like slacks, and I was like, "Oh, you're obviously trying to create a link between." this and the story, and so I'm put off by the whole idea.
I mean,
I spoke to the actor or the model involved, and he sent me an alternate picture where they put a different story, which was not related to slavery at all.
Wow.
So they had changed it.
The standard is a really dark paper anyway. Like,
very dark
it's
paper.
Like, not, it's definitely has an agenda.
The editor's ex-Tory, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
There's a reason why he's there with like no experience of editing.
It's George Osborne, isn't it?
George Osborne.
I really feel bad pointing out like the Circle is one as like this is the pillar of it. But the thing that gets to me is there was a time when Big Brother came out almost 20 years ago now, it was really interesting to sit and look at humans being humans. That's all it was. If you watch back, it's so dry. Yeah. It's a TV show watching it back, but it was humans being humans. Now what we have is a construction of a form of reality where people want to do something because they hope a version of themselves will make them money.
But isn't that like ironically, maybe it's making a really good point about, because that's what people do.
Yeah.
They've created a version of themselves and they make themselves Instagram like millionaires or whatever. I mean, the way you're talking about The Circle, it kind of sounds like the way I feel about Love Island.
It's entirely the same
thing. It's a show the thing that disappointed me most about Love Island is people I respect, like, really like that show.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And agreed. I think it's one of the most anti-black shows that is out there.
Massively.
And
not only that, especially people that, sorry to cut you, but like people I respected like it as well.
Mm.
And while I will not use your like of Love Island to form my opinion of you, but I would want creators to keep in mind that the longer you continue to endorse this form of entertainment, you are cannibalizing your own opportunities.
I feel, 100%. I definitely feel that's the case. And, you know, it's a real shame because it's kind of what I said before. Like, we've never had so much access to like exposure and being on a soapbox and money and opportunity. And we're kind of just using it to kind of just like go along with the kind of dumbing down and the assimilation. That
we've regressed to adolescence. I think that's what it is.
Perfect.
Social media
perfect
has allowed us to
regress
to adolescence in that your adolescence essentially was a point in time where we all had, no, we lacked the wisdom of experience and had the mind of children, but you have the hormones and impulses of an adult. And so obviously that's a recipe for disaster when you're in an environment where you're also being, your interactions and your socializing is separated along lines potentially of gender, depending on what kind of school you go to or your age and stuff. And so that's all bars your opportunity for learning and gaining more experience.
Mm.
Also, you learn to concede power to authority because you've got to raise your hand to speak when you're in school and stuff like that as well, despite you being having the body of an adult. So you're already learning to concede to control and authority, and I think that's what's been replicated because like, for example, if you look at like the popular guy in school when you were in secondary school, and then when you leave secondary school and you're no longer within what's a rather intense and kind of quite broad paradigm of interaction, and then when you leave, like in secondary school, that's probably you socialize the most people your age, most opportunity for it, and you do stuff like, you know, even extracurricular stuff. Once you leave school, it's normal people like that guy's a bus driver now, or that guy's like, you know, he's got a regular menial job like most people. But in school, the idea is that he was a popular person, he was handsome, or he was an early bloomer. And if you look at like things like Instagram and stuff like that now, it's the same thing where you have a popular girl and there's no merit for her popularity other than her popularity and her appearance. And that's how
it's a meritocracy based on superficiality.
But it's completely, really, yeah.
That
really
goes
weird.
Against the idea that the content of your character is king or queen. You know, like,
well,
that,
but it's not even content because even that's a projection of a false reality, isn't it?
But that's what I'm saying to you. Yeah. Like, the content of someone's character is like, I've sat in a room with you guys and there is content to your character that it enriches my life. And that being lost through this
And it's through a very kind of consistent and oppressive aesthetic that is kind of designed to kind of make people hate themselves. And it's actually the heart of it is consumerism. It's all capitalism.
That's
at the end of the day.
Why it's called the heart of it. Instagram. If it was about pictures, it'd be called Instagraph. The suffix for graph would refer to it being about pictures.
Hmm.
It's called Instagram because it's just to replace television, to provide this idealized aesthetic, and also to provide an aspirational lifestyle or journey based on shame. Or based on the fact that, you know, projecting this fallacy of a good life. The only difference is that it's not subject to the same level of regulation that TV is. So all the stupid images or the irresponsible images you see on Instagram, they're on TV as well. But with TV, regulation dictates that you have to put a disclaimer which says, this model in a shampoo advert is wearing extensions, or do not try this at home,
right,
or consult an adult. Whereas on Instagram, it's the Wild West.
Yeah.
So essentially, you have these projections of these kind of body types and stuff like that, and there's no governing body which dictates they have to let a potential audience know.
It's mad.
There's no watershed for Instagram, for example.
Yeah, and it's the Sol lip gloss. That's what it's for. Like these people don't even realize their power and how legitimate. They're literally just trying to sell lip gloss or Spanx or whatever it is. So it's not even for like, it's not even, I'd wish they were trying to dominate the world. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I wish they were trying to do something more important. They're just trying to sell foundation or whatever.
Well, it's not even trying to sell. It's just that I would say, esoterically, they know they have nothing else to offer. And they know that even their actions are hollow, because for you to have to chronicle these aspects of your life where you're not really actually engaging with people that have a care about your welfare, like to you to maintain that relevance, like they have nothing else. So if you approach people of that nature and say you sell this and sell this weight loss tea or this lollipop, they're going to do it because, you know, it's essentially, it's definitely a buyer's market. If you're a corporation or you're, you know, you have, and you want to find human billboards.
Yeah, Instagram, human billboards, So like going back to your question, that's definitely, and it kind of links to my response. It's like, if I can just protect her as long as possible from...
Or at least give her the self-defense methods.
To kind of deny it or to challenge it or to not engage with it. You know, there are better things to do than scroll through Instagram. There were better things to do.
And the thing, the good thing about kids potentially is that, you know, kids normally rebel against the zeitgeist or proceed in zeitgeist. So because everyone is on Instagram now, kids, the next generation might be like, oh, you're using Instagram.
What happened to Facebook? Do you know what I mean? Like kids stop using Facebook. So hopefully in the future.
I would tell the kids to respect and observe the wonder of nature as well. Like that.
Yeah.
That is something that I just think we grow up in cities. I grew up in a city.
I didn't go into a field until I was 25. Like, I went to like parks and stuff.
When you really get to appreciate nature, and there's the whole stats about how happier kids are if they have access to that.
It's access to the sun. But yeah, I think that's good. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, just to make sure your happiness is depends on, you know, your own. It stems from your own self love rather than seeking it from external places. I don't know how parents do it. I think I'm going to call my mother.
That's a good idea. Well, there were some good questions today. We went all over the place.
I think we fixed everything.
You're right. We fought the power.
We got the manifesto down at least.
Good luck with the creation of a human being.
Well, she's
your
created
body.
Now. She just has to get out somehow.
Escape plan. Have you ever seen that film?
Should I watch it? Is it useful?
For pregnancy. If you like Sly Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger in the same film, then you will be.
Yes, I do. I'm going to watch it.
And there's an Escape Plan 2 coming, actually. So.
Okay, I'm in.
That's a strange advert at the end of this podcast.
Cool. So before you go, other than the impending birth of your child, anything coming up we can look out for?
As it happens, no, I'm having a bit of I'm calling maternity leave, but it's not, because you get paid for that. No one's paying me to not show up at their comedy club, unfortunately. But maybe in the new year I will. Just follow me on my socials.
Stay in touch with the journey.
Having totally slagged it off, do follow me on social media if you'd like to know what I got to next.
And for an alternative narrative to your usual social media offering.
Exactly.
So Athena, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
For you and baby for coming through. And keep listening, guys. Thank you very much for listening.
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste. For more from Dane, go to danebaptiste.co.uk. or follow him at DaneBapTweets. Our guest was Athena Kugblenyu. You can follow Athena at Athena Kugblenyu. The show was produced by me, Howard Cohen. You can follow me at The Howard Cohen. The show was mixed and music was by Afei Saki. Thanks to Polly and Gelly. Thanks for listening. And remember, question everything.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.